The head of the Organisation for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons says he's not sure now when his inspectors will be allowed into the Syrian town of Douma to investigate this month's suspected chemical weapons attack. This follows the UN risk assessment team, which came under attack fire in Douma as they prepared the ground for the OPCW's fact-finding mission. The delay in the arrival of the inspectors, now 11 days after the chemical weapon attack, will raise fresh concerns over the relevance of the chemical weapons investigation and possible evidence tampering by the Syrian government and its main ally, Russia. Both Russia and Syria deny the poison gas attack took place, and they've even accused Britain of staging it. But beyond that, human rights advocates have questioned the double standard in international law, where the use of chemical weapons is banned, while conventional barrel bombs, for instance, which have wreaked havoc in Syria, are not. Kenneth Roth is the executive director of the New York-based Human Rights Watch. He's in Australia this week, meeting with senior government officials. Kenneth Roth, welcome to Breakfast.
Thanks for having me, Fran. Happy to be here.
Can we just talk about Syria to start with? Because according to a statement by the opposition Syrian National Council back in 2013, barrel bombs had at that time killed more than 20,000 people since the conflict began in 2011. Is it right? Does it make sense that the West draws a line, or the world draws a line, a red line around chemical weapons, but not barrel bombs?
Well, let me just correct one thing first, Fran, which is that both kinds of attacks on civilians are absolutely prohibited. Chemical weapons have a special treaty designed for them, but regardless of the weapon you use, the Geneva Conventions prohibit you targeting or firing indiscriminately at civilians. So there's no question that the Assad government, backed by Russia, is committing war crimes. The sad thing is that the West seems to have drawn a line to say, you know, if you use chemical weapons, you get bombed. And it's understandable. Chemical weapons are horrible weapons. But there's very little being done with respect to the massive war crimes killing most Syrian civilians that are done by conventional weapons, by barrel bombs and the like.
Well, the point is, I suppose, there's very little being done because the world has proven itself able to do very little in the 7 years that this war in Syria has been going on. I mean, that's the real problem, isn't it?
Well, the key at this point is really putting pressure on Putin, because Putin has enormous leverage. Assad would have toppled had it not been for Russia's backing. And so whether it's, you know, intensifying the economic or the political pressure on Putin, or the other big thing that began to be done is to try to bring to justice the perpetrators of these war crimes. Russia kept vetoing in the UN Security Council efforts to send Syria to the International Criminal Court. So a year and a half ago at the UN General Assembly, where there is no veto, the world set up basically a special prosecutor for Syria who is now working on making war crimes cases. The next step is going to be to set up a Syria tribunal. And I think we have to begin thinking actively of that, which, again, the General Assembly could do on its own if Russia continues to block justice efforts at the Security Council.
Yeah, though you do wonder what the special tribunal and others may be able to do. And it brings to it highlights, especially what we've seen the last couple of weeks, the effectiveness of the Security Council. Russia's been able to veto every meaningful action put forward in that chamber over the last few weeks. Is the Security Council no longer fit for purpose? Is that what we're presented with?
Well, there is an effort led principally by France to try to dissuade the permanent five members of the Security Council, the US, UK, France, Russia, and China, from using their veto in situations of mass atrocities. You know, sadly, that rule is not being followed at this stage. And so, you know, I do think we have to look to activate the General Assembly much more regularly. You know, another situation that we're looking at in similar terms right now is Myanmar's treatment of the Rohingya, where the Security Council hasn't yet even brought up the possibility of sending this to the International Criminal Court. We fear if that happens, we might get either a Chinese or a Russian veto. But then the aim would be to go to the General Assembly and replicate what happened in Syria and begin the process of justice there. So if the Security Council is going to make itself irrelevant, we have to look to other UN bodies to act.
And the process of justice seems to be so slow lately. And that is, of course, as China emerges more and more as a global power and has more confidence, I suppose, in exercising its veto, and Russia the same. That aside, what about the power of Australia? You're here talking to Australian leaders, senior people in these areas. Australia now has a seat on the Human Rights Council, the UN Human Rights Council. What's your message to Australia?
Well, with respect to the Human Rights Council, which Australia joined for the first time beginning in January, the message was it's not enough to vote for human rights, which Australia regularly does. if Australia is going to occupy one of the handful of Western seats on the council, it also has a responsibility to lead with respect to at least an important country situation. For example, Netherlands recently did this and got an international investigation of the war crimes in Yemen, despite intense Saudi opposition. And so we'd like to see Australia take the lead on a country like Egypt or Turkey that so far has avoided scrutiny under the UN Human Rights Council, but very much deserves it.
What about Australia taking a lead in a country, in an issue within our region? Would that be more appropriate? I mean, you mentioned Myanmar and the treatment of the Rohingya Muslims. Is Australia doing enough there?
Well, there, our concern has really been that Australia is behind some of its peers with respect to bilateral pressure on the Burmese military, either to stop the ethnic cleansing or to create conditions in Northern Rakhine State so that the Rohingya refugees, 688,000 in Bangladesh, can safely return home. So, for example, the U.S., European Union, Canada have all imposed targeted economic sanctions on senior Burmese army officials. Australia hasn't done that yet. Australia indeed maintains a very modest training program for Burmese soldiers who are involved in UN peacekeeping. That's the kind of thing you do in a business as usual situation.
But isn't the kind of thing you do
against humanity?
Yeah, but isn't the kind of thing you might do to try and improve the attitudes and the behaviours and the rules, I suppose, within a military that you? If you have some leverage
There's no harm in talking to the military and trying to persuade them. But, lots of people have done that. And it's clear that they're not persuadable. The only thing that's going to work is pressure. And so if Australia maintains these military ties with the army, basically saying, despite the crimes against humanity that you committed, despite possibly even genocide, we're just going to keep doing business with you, that really undercuts the pressure being sent by other Western countries.
Before we spoke to you, we heard reports of Rodrigo Duterte, the Philippines leader. There's an Australian nun who's been locked up and she's now released, but it looks like she may be thrown out of the country. Rodrigo Duterte basically describing her as an undesirable alien, presumably for criticising human rights efforts. And he pointed the finger at Australia, says, you should go and criticise the human rights efforts of your own government. And he talked about refugees. Is this an issue for Australia when we've got someone like Rodrigo Duterte pointing the finger at Australia for human rights abuses?
Well, obviously, Duterte fully deserves human rights scrutiny. This is a man who has encouraged the summary execution of more than 12,000 drug suspects since he took over about 2 years ago. So these themselves are potential crimes against humanity. The International Criminal Court has said they're going to be looking at this. He may well be prosecuted. So everybody should be pressuring him. Australia would be a more effective global human rights advocate if it cleaned up its act. And sadly, it's the only country that is warehousing its asylum seekers offshore, that is, treating the people in Manus and Nauru, utterly cruelly, just to make a point, to try to stop the boats when, in fact, ironically, at this point, when they've begun to send these asylum seekers to the United States, that hasn't encouraged the boats to start coming. So the rationale is even undercut now.
Yeah, and Australia's been criticised this in international forums for more than a decade now. But Australia on the Human Rights Council has said it wants to focus on advancing the rights of women and girls, advancing human rights for Indigenous peoples, promoting strong national human rights institutions. Are we showing courage and leadership on those fronts? And would that be a start? Would that be good?
Obviously, with respect to Indigenous people in Australia, there's much to be done to improve the lot of the Aboriginal people. And so, there is clearly work to be done there. But, our message really to the Australian government is that it's not enough to focus on these broad thematic issues on the Human Rights Council. Everybody likes to take on broad thematic issues because it doesn't make particular enemies of other governments.
Right.
The hard work, which we hope Australia will take on, is to pick a government, to pick a highly abusive government. It could be the Philippines, and to actively pursue them. That's the tough work, and that's what we really need the Western members of the Human Rights Council to do.
Kenneth Roth, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Kenneth Roth is Executive Director of Human Rights Watch.